Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great service department at Sunbury Motors, open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Parts, service, they get the job done at Sunbury Motors. And then go online and check out the product line. Believe me, this is going to open up. When things do open up, I know a lot of people have told me that they want to buy. The interest rates are great. I've got people telling me they want to buy. Well, you want to deal with Sunbury Motors. All right. Patrick Chambers in a moment, so let's set the tone with our play-by-play call of the day.
Stevens, the leader of this team. Nittany Lions down by two. Dredd for the lead! With a hand in his face, and Penn State back up one. Harper wants to take Dredd himself. Yeboah with a contested three. It's off. Harrah boxes out, and it's over.
And Penn State beat Rutgers in the Jordan Center, winning it by one. One of 21 wins that Nittany Lions had this season. And with that, it is so good to hear the voice of my good friend, the head basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, Patrick Chambers.
It's great to hear you. It's finally good to hear you. It's great to hear your voice too, my friend.
I want to start with this, and then I'll get to coaches versus cancer. Sue Paterno made a leadership donation to the Student Emergency Fund and Lions Pantry. Courtney and you then followed that up. How important was that for you and Courtney to do?
You know what, Steve? We've been trying to help out any way we can, and we know restaurants are struggling and students could be struggling, and you know, we wish we could do more for the people on the front line. And how do you do that? In what ways can you do that? And really, I'm giving credit here to my, obviously, Sue Paterno started it, but to Courtney. We're on social media. We saw something, and I said, how about this cause? This could be a great cause for all, you know, what the fans did for us over the last couple of years. Our attendance has skyrocketed. Our student section has been phenomenal. The Legion of Blue has been terrific. And what better way to give back to them since they gave to us? And help them out a little bit. Hit the students' fund and the Lions Pantry. I thought it was important. My wife thought it was important. So really, I can't take credit. There's two very strong women with Sue Paterno and Courtney Chambers.
Yes.
So when she wanted to do this and felt passionate about it, we followed suit.
Absolutely. All right. So now let's get into coaches versus cancer. Obviously, the tournament's not going to happen, but and this is going to be the 25th year, though, of the coaches versus cancer program. The numbers have been phenomenal over the years. And with all of this, I think a lot of people may not realize there are going to be other events during the course of the year and ways for people to get involved.
Yeah, I thought as a committee, we sat down and really weighed some different decisions. We moved the timeline back. Maybe we postpone it. Maybe we push it to August. There were so many factors that went into this decision. But ultimately, I think we landed at the right spot. Look, COVID-19 has pretty much stopped everything in our world right now. But unfortunately, cancer's not stopping either, Steve. They're not sitting on the bench. They're not sitting on the sideline and saying, okay, COVID-19, it's your inning. It's your day. Mm-hmm. No. You know, I've shared a few stories with some people out there, with the committee out there, that, you know, I have an 18-year-old friend. I think you saw him the day I was interviewed. I think we were playing Illinois.
Yes.
The day you and I did our pregame interview. His name was Jack Moran, and he had to get his leg amputated.
Yeah.
So he's going through his third treatment, 3 of 6. He just got a prosthetic. Here's the good news, Steve. There was a short video that he and his father sent to me of him walking with the prosthetic.
That's awesome.
So that totally awesome. Courtney and I were crying. I mean, it was just amazing. But again, cancer's not stopping. And then there was a young a young man 10 years old by the name of Joel. I don't know if you heard about this, but somehow he got to us, and he's a huge Penn State fan. I think James reached out, maybe Sandy, and we've become, you know, pretty good friends with him and his family. He's 10. He's hooked up to everything that you can possibly imagine in these hospital beds and fighting cancer. So your heart just goes out. We have four children that are healthy, 11, 9, 8, and 4. And, you know, you just ache for these families and these young kids that are battling. And, look, think about this. They have to be separated from everybody for the most part, right, because of COVID-19. So how it's compounded the problem. Not only are you going through some cancer battles, not only the families and the caregivers going through it, but now you can't even be in the same room, yeah, with them unless you have, you know, unless you're checked, pre-checked, you know, to be able to get in the room. It's just, it's devastating. So let's keep going. In the fall, we're going to do some things. We've got the soiree. I think that's August the 29th.
Yes.
We're going to do a 5K run. Real Men Wear Pink. All of that stuff is going to be pushed. I'm hoping for reverse card drawing. We can blow that out as well, just to help out our local community and help out American Cancer Society. And then again, Courtney and I sat down wanting to help. So we're going to do the coaches challenge, yep, $5,000, and we're hoping to raise $50,000 by Labor Day. Look, we're trying to chip in any way we can at this point.
No question. In fact, in 2019, the numbers were great, $210,000 raised. And not only that, but the Bob Perks Cancer Assistance Fund, I mean, the local nonprofit was able to, you know, I mean, $52,000 going, I mean, this is going to residents when they really need help trying to get through the fight with cancer. The fight with cancer isn't just the patient. It's everything that goes around the patient.
100%. It's bills. It's gas money. It's toll money. It's a lot. It's Hope Lodge.
Yep.
I mean, look, Steve, you and I know this. We've gone on 10 years now, Steve. It's really just 9, but going on 10. We've been together. We've been partnered for a long time, yep, and this committee is unreal. Their leadership is fantastic, with Scott and Wendy and everybody on that committee. And then I reached out, their direction, I reached out to all the big-time sponsors of this golf tournament. And look, everybody's disappointed because it was a premier event every year. Yep. Everybody wanted to come out. It wasn't just basketball. Football players were coming out. James Franklin would come through, and all the other coaches would be a part of it. It just brought everybody back. It brought the community together. And, man, don't we need something like that? So that's why it was so challenging. But the committee, the sponsors, I mean, we can't thank them enough for everything that they do all year round.
And this fight is all year round. And the fight is all decade long, too. A couple basketball questions. I want to start with Sam Sessoms. Now, Stadler and Waldorf, you're very familiar with the two of them up there in the balcony.
No doubt. Two of my favorite people. Two of my favorite people in the Muppets. Go ahead.
We're communicating back and forth during the recruitment period, and we both felt that this young man was to offense what Jamari Wheeler is to defense. Are Stadler and Waldorf that far off?
No, it's fun. Stadler and Waldorf are not too far off. Somehow we got to get a name for Jack Ham, but we'll think about that at a later date.
That's right.
You know, notice how I'm bringing Jack into this. It's classic. Look, DJ had a front row seat to an epic game at the Donna Friel Classic in Conshohocken.
Yeah.
Of Miles Dredd dropping a major number.
Yep.
And Sam Sessoms dropping a major number. And I'm almost positive DJ and I talked about it shortly thereafter about how good Miles was, but he also said, there's this other kid going to Binghamton. Man, was he terrific.
Yeah.
And we followed along with Sam, and we did look at him late in his high school career. But at that point, we had guards, and I just didn't think – and we didn't have scholarships. We didn't have scholarships. So at that time, it wasn't going to happen. But – as his two-year career went on and how good he became at Binghamton, and man, can he score the ball, and man, can he shoot the ball, and man, is he a surgeon off the ball screen. And he's all about sitting out, too. He wants to sit out. He wants to develop. He wants to, you know, Greg Maskinas and our player development, our assistants and everybody to get their hands around him and continue the process of getting better. I love this kid's vision, and I love how he doesn't even know how to buy in yet, and he's already buying in, the fact that he wants to do that. So it's going to be a powerful punch for us. And you know what it does? Jamari leaves, and we still got a great class in MJ and Miles and Brock and Seth, and that's going to be awesome, and this great young class that we have coming in. But now you have a guy with 2 years' experience in college who's going to sit out. It keeps us older. Keeps us older, and I think, as you and I have talked about, for years. How do you get older? How do you get older, and how do you stay older?
And you've been consistently saying that's one of the reasons why you went the JC route with one player, as a matter of fact, the idea of staying older. The other part, too, the practice part of it. What can Sam do that is going to make a couple of other guys, like Myron and so forth, better defensively? Conversely, what can Jamari do that actually is going to make Sam better offensively?
Yeah, I think the way Sam is, you know, able to get his own shot off the bounce and able to use a ball screen. I mean, MJ, and he's going to challenge Jamari. Jamari, hey, all defensive team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
He's still going to challenge Jamari to be even better.
Yep.
And he brings a little bit of an alpha. You know, he got a little bit of an alpha dog. I gave him the compliment in inner circles. He had a little bit of Kyle Lowry in him, a little bit of a pit bull in him.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that wants to continue to prove people wrong. And to me, you just love that in practice. So he's going to push MJ. He's going to push these guys. He's going to push these freshmen to commit every day to being the best they can on the defensive end, which is fantastic. Now, for him, when Jamari Wheeler's governing him, here you got an elite speed, elite side-to-side lateral quickness. Can you still do it against a Jamari Wheeler? So for him, offensively, you haven't seen anybody like this kid.
Plus,
you and I both know this. You're at practice.
Yeah.
Jamari's picking you up.
Yeah.
If we're doing half court, he's picking you up at half court. If
right.
we're doing full court, he's picking you up full court.
Right. Plus, Sam has been very open about what a Penn State degree means to him. It sounds like he's got a very good perspective on all this.
I tell you what, I think this kid had such an incredible vision for himself. He decides to go to Shipley. And I wouldn't say it's a big power basketball school, Steve. If he was going to go anywhere, Catholic League or one of the pubs or one of the charters down in Philly, because that's where he's from. But he's a little bit of an outlier. He takes a chance on Shipley, incredible coach down there in Phil. And, you know, he says, look, you got to be well-rounded. You come to Shipley, you become well-rounded. And education became very important to him. Really smart kid. Really excelled at Binghamton and in high school. So now you're getting a kid who's polished, who's ready to go, who has the structure, who has the routine, and wants to excel in the classroom. Again, that's the type of Penn State basketball players we're looking for. Not only want you to compete and be winners and commit and be loyal and be bought in on the basketball court and be an all-star in your role, but you got to go to class. I mean, I'm very direct.
Oh, I know.
With these guys. Hey, you got to go to class. Like, we class check.
Yep.
We're not messing around here. You're going to be in the Morgan Academic Resource Center. You're going to be with Joey and Ross, and you're going to have study hall, and we're going to push you. And you know what? He wants that, and that's why he's a Penn Stater now.
Big picture here. This is a point in time when Tim Frazier's in the NBA, Josh Reeves, okay, on the two-way with Dallas, so he's been in the NBA. Tony Carr has been drafted in the second round of the NBA, and now you've got a former Nittany Lion and Calvin Booth being seriously considered for general manager's jobs in the NBA. What does that now tell us about the pathway, and to go with the publicity that a Lamar Stevens generated for this program and what this season generated for the program? What's it telling us big picture about what Penn State basketball, not just what it was, but what it is and what it is going forward?
Steve, you make so many good points. I mean, we worked hard at developing players. Let's give Eddie D and Danny Earl and those guys credit. They brought Tim Frazier in, and we just kept pushing him and developing him and getting him to a level that he was prepared to play in the NBA, and he has done that. Again, his path wasn't a straight line. It was a little bit windy. But, man, has he represented Penn State basketball and the university as well as anybody? And then to go with Josh and with Tony being drafted and Josh being a two-way with the Mavericks, it's just exciting to see the player development, to see guys in the NBA. We really didn't have anybody. You brought up Calvin since Calvin in 1999.
Yeah.
So it's just telling you the kid that we're bringing in, the player that we're bringing in, the families that we're bringing in, the work ethic of these kids, the work ethic of our staff. We can't discount what the staff is doing by finding some diamonds in the rough of kids that want to work hard and want to achieve their dreams. So Penn State right now is in the NBA where we couldn't say that before. And now we can say, hey, we've developed NBA basketball players that are sticking around. And now we have somebody in the executive offices as well, in the management, in the organization. I mean, that is a powerful statement. When once we were an afterthought, like, oh, Penn State's a football school. Mm-hmm. Oh, Penn State's a wrestling school. Oh, Penn State's a volleyball school. Oh, Penn State's a lax school. Or No. We have put this program, I've been saying that, I'm going to still say it, as a top 25 team, top half or top quarter, now top six, averaging the last 3 years.
Yep.
Finished fifth this year in the Big Ten. Hopefully, see, we're not going anywhere. I'm going to remain optimistic. We're not going anywhere because we got guys in the league. We got guys that are willing to sacrifice to be great players, to be all Big Ten players. Lamar Stevens, 2 years in a row, first team all Big Ten. That's impressive. How hard was that for him to do?
I know.
Right? When's the last time, Steve, you would know this? When's the last time anybody did that? I know I knew this, but I forget it right now.
That was first team all conference?
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row. I mean, it's you know.
Was it Taylor Battle? Was it Joe Crispin?
Taylor Battle was first team, yeah. And obviously, I mean, and Crispin. But, I mean, this is, look, you talk about, you know, you're not going anywhere. The only way you may be going is you may be going up another tick up the ladder and another tick up the ladder. That's about where you're going.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I feel really good about our team right now, yeah. Where we are, what we're doing in these Zoom meetings, what they're doing in partnering up and staying interactive and staying engaged. And I'm really proud of them. And I got to tell all the Penn Staters out there, these guys are doing well academically.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't have the structure and the routine when you're on campus. You know, you might slip up a little bit, but we just had an entire program meeting on Wednesday or yesterday, and everybody's staying on point. So, got some really, really good kids on this team.
And which then brings it, because you're not around them, which means Greg Miskindis can't be around them. What are the challenges in terms of what they need to do off-season weight training-wise, because they can't be in the weight room with you? And also maybe even the nutritional part of it, because diets, you know, look, they're home. So diets, I mean, need to continue to be strict if possible. So how can you monitor that?
So what we've done is individual meetings, which are FaceTime meetings between me and a player. Obviously staff meetings. Greg and I talk all the time, and Saz and our staff all the time. And we wanted to – player development's not going to stop. And we have to continue. They had their 2 weeks off. And now there's some rules and regulations about what we can do. But each guy, we came up with three goals. Greg was permitted to send them out some equipment. And then Greg is doing videos to continue that process of developing. We got to keep moving here.
Yep.
We can't, just because the coronavirus, you know, we're all sitting at home, it doesn't mean you stop. You know, if you have your driveway, you got a basketball hoop out front, let's use that. If you have a garage, if you have a park that's still open, use that. If you have a grassy field behind your house or down the street, use that. But if we're going to send you equipment, we're counting on you to do your part and continue the process of getting better. And I talked to our guys about that. Greg has been phenomenal. He's sending out a couple of videos a week to show them what they need to do. I have a leadership council. John and soon to be Trent and Jamari and Miles and MJ. Those guys are partnering up with some of the younger guys and some of the other guys on the team to hold them accountable. We're doing a plank challenge. We've invited, because of Shar, this is Shar Moret's idea. She's fantastic. You know, Peloton's free for 90 days. So you can go on there. It's just not for cycling. It's for core work, for strength work, for yoga. It's everything. So if you need a different workout or you want to mix things up, well, there's a yoga session for you. So we're providing our team, our guys, with a lot of information, and then we're, you know, we're checking in and checking up. The staff's doing that. And then tomorrow, Friday, we have a full team meeting, and we meet as a team. John Harris sets it all up. I just kind of visit and check on everybody, see how everybody's going, and we kind of have a good time on it. And it's a lot of fun. It's unique. It's different. But I think we're doing a lot to stay connected despite the circumstances we're in.
And you have a phenomenal staff. And obviously at this time of the year, you're trying to do whatever you can recruiting-wise. What kind of job have they done under these kind of circumstances to make sure that Penn State, with all this momentum, is right there in the thick of things?
Unbelievable. Keith Ergo, Jimmy Ferry, Kevin Freeman, Ross Condon, Nick Cappy, our GAs, just Wendy Miller, Saz, just Colin, PJ Mullen, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Social media wise, we're attacking it socially. Our assistants have broken up the team into smaller groups, which we do anyway because we have academic groups, because we're always double checking, triple checking everything. They're reaching out to our guys. It's not about texting anymore either, Steve. It's about FaceTiming.
Yep.
I think it's really important to see them, to engage in conversation that way, because texting has become, I'm not lethargic, but it's just like, oh, here's a text. No, I think we got to go a deeper, another layer here.
Yep.
And Ergo has led that charge. And you know what? I feel like they're really doing a nice job of keeping the group connected and keeping it light and still keeping it fun and having a good time, which I think is vital during this time because this is unheard of what we're going through. Yep. This is unheard of. I never seen, right, Steve, in your lifetime?
No. No, I know you think I went back to 1917 and Spanish flu, but that's not true.
I thought you'd been working on football and basketball since 1917, so I guess that's not true.
Burke Herman was my first coach. and finally, these unprecedented times, just remember, everybody, keep in mind all the events of Coaches versus Cancer, because despite the focus that we have right now, cancer doesn't take a day off. We can't take a day off.
Nah, we can't. We got to keep moving the needle. We got to keep helping those that are affected by this disease and the caretakers. It's really important. We continue our mission. The committee's doing a phenomenal job, and we want to be there for everybody. And real quick, Steve, thank you for having me on. It's great to talk to you. I miss you, buddy. But I also want to just give a shout-out to all the caregivers, the healthcare workers out there, what they're doing on the front lines on a daily basis, our military, the police officers, everybody out there that's trying to keep everybody safe and healthy. They're the true heroes here, and we got to give them a few claps. And today's National High Five Day.
Yeah.
And we can't technically high five right now because we have to stay 6 feet apart. So we'll give a couple virtual high fives to all those great men and women out there.
That's awesome. I didn't get along with Burke Herman anyway. So,
Steve, I can't see you. You can't see me, but I'm giving you a double high five, my friend.
Double high five to you, my friend. It is so great to hear you. Can't wait to be around you again.
Yeah, God bless and be safe. Take care.
Patrick Chavers. All right. No, I didn't announce the games when Burke Herman was the coach. All right, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Pro Football Focus. Anthony Tresh, next half hour. We'll talk about the draft here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Check out the Sunbury Motors website. Look at the great product lines that they have. Keep in mind what the interest rates are. And some of the great deals that you will get once things get rolling again. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Service Department, parts service, always open 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at Sunbury Motors. 1 week from today, we're all going to get together on Zoom. Again, Lisa is somebody that likes to entertain, likes to be around people. Matt would rather have everything on Zoom. So it turns out in this particular year, we're going to do it Matt's way. But the big draft party is a week from today. The first round is a week from today. And so with that in mind, we now bring in Anthony Tresh from Pro Football Focus. Anthony, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I was really getting into those. Those are some interesting stories there.
Yeah, that's what we try to do to kill the time. All right, so let's get to the draft, and because you've been breaking down everybody. In your opinion, when you look at everybody, is Chase Young to you the number one prospect in the draft, and how much of a drop is there actually from a Chase Young as a prospect to what the next best prospect is?
Yeah, and if we're taking quarterbacks out of the conversation, he definitely is. I mean, he shattered PFF records across the board, you know, as far as his grading goes, produced a 96 pass rush grade and overall grade, which was by far the highest we've ever seen, broke Quinnen Williams' record that we saw the year before. And he was just flat out, I mean, he dominated tackles and had some of the best production we've ever seen from a Power 5 edge defender. But when you bring quarterbacks into the conversation, you have to look at Joe Burrow. And, I mean, this guy is the best prospect we've ever evaluated. And that's including Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, all those guys, all the Bosas, and even Chase Young. Joe Burrow is definitely the best we've ever seen. So I wouldn't say Chase Young is the best prospect okay. in this draft because Burrow, I mean, granted, Chase Young shattered records, but Burrow broke nearly every record we've had in the quarterback book. I mean, we have a metric called wins above average here at PFF, which is basically WAR, wins above replacement at the college level.
Sure.
And his wins above average this past year was 2.9, and the next best we've ever seen was down at 2.3. So, I mean, there's a pretty big gap from everyone else to what he did this past year. But Chase Young's definitely the best non-quarterback prospect we've evaluated, one of the best non-quarterback prospects we've ever evaluated in PFF college's existence.
Yeah, it's one thing that does impress me, and I was talking to Charlie Casserly about him yesterday, is that Young is the kind of – some guys have a move and maybe have a and probably have a second move. It looks like he's got four moves, and some of them are counters, and that – to me, is a step above what, you know, he has, you know, obviously the natural gifts, but to me, it's the number of counter moves that he has when you watch him on tape.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and then you get these, I think what really impressed me this past year was watching him against Northwestern. I mean, when you have a guy make the opposing offense completely, you know, just do completely change their offense because he's been that dominant after the first few plays of the game, I think that says something about his style of play. I mean, you can't really double team him. And I've seen debate over whether or not he is actually better than the Bosas or Myles Garrett, but I would have to say right now he definitely is. I mean, he is the real deal, and he doesn't just have one. He's the full package from everything, you know, height, weight, length. He's got it.
All right, I want to get to Burrow for a moment. Burrow makes the move and goes from Ohio State and transfers to LSU. There is no question that in the junior year, he has a very good year. Not awesome and incredible, but has a very good year. And at LSU, with all due respect, since Zach Mettenberger, he's the biggest step up they've had, and he's probably the best quarterback they've had since Burt Jones. But that's way back. But where did he get so much better in this particular year? Why the leap from very good to now what you're talking about?
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people say that he wasn't, you know, he was nothing much more than an average quarterback in 2018. And I will say, I think he's
I said very good.
Yeah, not you. I mean, I've seen various television networks that have been saying, you know, he was an average quarterback in 2018, but I'm siding with you here. I mean, he was a pretty good quarterback. He was a top 30 quarterback in our grading system.
Yeah.
And looking at the big difference between him in 2018 versus 2019, his overall decision-making, especially when he was under duress, was immensely better. I mean, he was still accurate with the ball. I mean, very, very rarely do you see a quarterback just completely change their accuracy. But last year, he was still one of the five most accurate passers as far as our ball charting accurate pass metric goes. And, I mean, this year, like I said, he just got a little bit better in that. So, I mean, that his accuracy was still great last year. He just very, very much limited the turnover-worthy plays this year. And I think you kind of have to credit some of that to Joe Brady and what he did in the offense. I mean, he put an offense in front of him that he could succeed with, and one he was comfortable with running. And he was vocal about it before the season, how amped up he was to run this type of offense, because this is one that he went back in high school. I mean, this is the one he wanted to run, and it really helps him as far as that. And really, I think the biggest thing, he just really looked more confident and was very much more poised when the pocket was collapsing. I mean, he would climb that bin with bodies flying around him and deliver a strike. And that's something we kind of didn't see. I mean, we saw some of it in 2018, but we just saw a lot more of it in 2019.
This draft is deep in wide receiver. We'll get to that in a moment. It's not as deep, though, in edge rusher, which we touched on with Chase Young. One of those that would be in that edge rushing conversation is Penn State's Yetur Gross-Matos. What do you see with him when you watch the video?
Yeah, and I'll have to agree with you there. It's not definitely a deep edge rush class. And there's a bit of a difference, I would say, between PFF and the public consensus on who the next best edge rusher is. And I think a lot of people would say either Kayvon Chaisson from LSU or Yetur Gross-Matos from Penn State. But both of those guys, they really don't have the production to warrant, you know, a first-round pick. And they both have the tools. They definitely have the tools. But I like to say that you don't really want to overdraft on potential, and you really don't want to do that in the first round. Because, I mean, these guys have a lot of potential, but they didn't really have the production to warrant it. And, you know, like I said, Yetur specifically, he has the traits that you just cannot teach. I mean, he has the length and the size, and he has crazy power. I mean, in our draft guide, it's over 1,200 pages long. I definitely recommend taking a look at it. I mean, it's a great thing that some of our guys have put together, and I'm fortunate to be part of that. But, yeah, I mean, you can see it on there. He has all the physical tools, and going back on there, you can see it. You can see him flash every once in a while, but then it just kind of disappears. And I think those two guys, they're very similar in that sense. And I think in day two, when they're still available in the middle of the second round, I think it's worth taking a flyer on them just because of those crazy tools, and you can try and work and develop them. But I wouldn't call them maybe the second or third best edge rushers, you know, in this draft class. I think at that moment you kind of have to roll with AJ Epenesa, of course,
yes,
and then Curtis Weaver and Julian Okwara. And I think those two are going to – they're falling down a lot of boards. And I've seen them some – even as far as the late third round, and I think those guys would be great steals because right now we have first-round grades on.
Right. And I want to ask you about Curtis Weaver for a moment. And this is where I give draft personnel a lot of credit, and this is going to go to Carson Wentz. But Wentz is playing at North Dakota State. And, look, we know North Dakota State's terrific, but we also know that the caliber of competition they're going against, that's not – the Penn State defense, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, okay? Yet his game translates to the NFL. Weaver at Boise State is not going against a quality tackle game in and game out in the schedule they play. Just isn't. It's a fact of life, right? But what is it about his game that you say he's got a real chance against great competition where his game does translate? Because this, to me, that's always that tricky question. That's where I think you guys do a great job of finding this stuff.
Yeah, and really, when you're looking at these small school guys, I mean, it's funny you bring this up because I was thinking about this morning with a guy, you know, like Kyle Duggar from Lenoir Ryan. It's kind of hard to judge what he did in college when you're playing against that type of level of competition. He's going against D2 guys. Curtis Weaver going up against obviously better than Division II guys, but not the powerhouses like you were mentioning. However, he did just flat out dominate that competition. I mean, he produced a pass rush win rate over the last 2 years that's 3 percentage points higher than any other edge defender in college football. I mean, it was a pretty ridiculous rate, and he won on a consistent basis. And really, what we wanted to see more of him was just we needed to see him at the combine kind of show he had a little bit more athleticism than we thought looking at the tape. And he did show that. But I think that's kind of the bigger concern is whether or not he can stand against NFL-caliber tackles. However, but like I said, he does have the production that warrants that look. And really, he, like I said, he just overpowered him. I mean, he had was very explosive off that first step. He didn't really have a huge bend, kind of like a guy like Julian Okwara, I was mentioning earlier, but he did have that production. He just flat out over-dominated, you know, any of the tackles he went up against game in and game out. And those, that's something, you know, guys like Ettore Gross-Matos and Chazon, they really didn't do. I mean, like, they just flashed the reps, granted, gets much better high-level tackles. But you have to look at a guy like Curtis Weaver, and you have to love what he did. You know, he consistently just dominated.
That's why I preface it with Wentz, because that's an example of great success. Because Wentz is a heck of an NFL quarterback. I mean, he's really, really good. But again, you know, coming out, that was always the question. Like, okay, he did this, but he did this against these guys, and it did translate. And Weaver obviously has a chance to really translate at the next level. So now I want to transition to the wideout part. Deep, deep draft. And in that deep, deep draft, one of them is K.J. Hamler. When you look at Penn State's K.J. Hamler, nobody's saying he's first night, but when you see him, what do you see in his game that translates to the league? What are a couple of things that you see in him that they will have a couple of questions about until he actually plays a game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's without question, he is one of the best separation getters in this entire draft class. I mean, it's pretty apparent. I mean, when I went back and watched him, you know, through our database, it was just pretty remarkable to see the amount of times he would just fly past defensive backs and he ended up 5 yards ahead of him just waiting for the ball. I mean, it game in and game out, he would separate at a high level. And actually, he had one of the highest explosive play rates in the slot over the last 2 years, one of the three highest rates in college football, as a matter of fact. And he generated separation against single coverage at one of the three highest rates again over the last couple of years. So, I mean, really with him, there's only one big concern, and it's the drafts. And when once you start, I know our guy, Mike Renner, our lead draft analyst, he's kind of been, I've heard him say it a bunch of times, that we're kind of overrate drops a little bit in how they translate to the NFL, and they kind of knock guys a little bit too much. But when, in Hamler's case, once you get to that about 10% drop rate, that's when you should start to be a little concerned. But Hamler's up there at 17%, and I think that's something you kind of have to ask yourself. You know, can you live with a guy that's around 5'9" and less than 180 pounds dropping 17% of his catchable targets, having him on the field and for an early, probably likely early mid-second round pick? And, you know, you have to look at what he brings to the table as far, you know, and I think you have to kind of ask yourself, does his ability to separate outweigh that? And I think, yes, absolutely. He's definitely one of the more underrated guys, and he's been rising up our draft board. Right now, he sits at number 41. So I think if you're seeing how loaded this wide receiver class is, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of teams say just because of that alone, those draft concerns, we might, you know, look at another direction just because there's a lot of different guys available. But I think they shouldn't overvalue that too much.
Obviously, there's a lot of focus on the quarterbacks. We already talked about Burrow. But obviously, the next ones are Tua, Herbert, and Love. What particular order do you think?
Yeah, without question, Burrow is number one. And even if Tua was healthy, it would still be Burrow number one by a mile. And right now, even with the injury, Tua is still the second-best quarterback in this class. And to even consider Justin Herbert over Tua is kind of a bit of a stretch just because, you know, granted, Tua was in a great situation. That's probably his biggest flaw within his play was that he could not have been in a better situation. He has pretty much four first-round wide receivers on his roster in these last couple years. But he limited mistakes. He was accurate with the ball, and he had great pocket presence. Justin Herbert really didn't have any of those things. I mean, he wasn't accurate with the football. He's got an absolute cannon, and that's kind of where Jordan Love falls. I mean, these two guys have cannons for an arm, and it's easy to fall in love with that when you see those high-end reps on tape. However, you just cannot think that that's going to happen every single play. And you have to be accurate on a throw-for-throw basis. Neither really were. You have to be a good decision-maker. Justin Herbert really wasn't. Jordan Love definitely wasn't. He had one of the highest turnover-worthy play rates of the year last year. And I think the biggest thing when looking at Justin Herbert is when he was under pressure, he had one of the 10 lowest negatively graded play rates, or 10 worst negatively graded play rates in all of college football. I think there's just a lot of panic there, and he just really didn't show out in the big games like Tua half.
Yeah.
So right now, in my opinion, it would be Joe Burrow, Tua. I think I would still throw Justin Herbert in that three spot with Jalen Hurts right there behind him, and then Jake Fromm, and then Jordan Love or Anthony Gordon right thereafter. I think, you know, we wouldn't really take Jordan Love much earlier than the third round.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm glad you threw Fromm in there. That's good. Anthony, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Great stuff.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Anthony Trash joining us from Pro Football Focus. Used to hearing that voice. I think we're going to hear more and more from him, not just from the draft, but also into the football season, too, as we go. All right, we'll take a break. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Parts, service, whatever you need. They're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Go online, check out the great product lines. You combine that with some of the interest rates right now. When it is go time on buying, they will be ready for you. All right. More coming up tomorrow, as a matter of fact, on the show, including Barrett Salee, who will join us from CBS Sports. We'll talk about the state of college football and basketball with Barrett Salee tomorrow. Saturday, beginning at 1:35, Sandy Barber and James Franklin. And you'll hear it right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and the Penn State Sports Network, which I should point out the Sunbury Motors studio will be invaluable to that production. As you're listening at WKOK, you say, yep, I know where he is. Other people on the network, I mean, I'll mention where I am, but... You know, you hear it every day. And what's the best piece of advice that you heard out of today's show, Matt Cotrillo?
The wife.
Non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable, exactly.
All right. You have a gem. Remember, there are certain things with the gem that are non-negotiable. To quote Mike Singer from the Denver Post. And also, as I pointed out to Patrick Chambers, Joe Paterno, Patrick Chambers, and Steve Jones, all married very, very well. As we were talking about Sue's gift that Patrick and Courtney followed up with. All right. Look forward to tomorrow. Be safe, everybody. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.